Hello, and welcome to the audio edition of Beastly Business, the first in a series of animal behavior, human-animal bond mysteries, written and read by Myrna Milani. Chapter 19. Whatever I expected an ex-biker attack dog trainer to look like, the impeccably groomed, middle-aged man dressed in a conservative gray suit who introduced himself as Nick Cooper the next morning didn't match it. "What would you like to know about Schutzhund?" he asked affably. "I'm interested in the way the protective phase of the training polarizes people," I explained, pleased that I could at least begin with a truthful statement. "Some, maybe a lot of people, think there's no need to train a dog like that." "Believe me," he smiled broadly, "there aren't many dogs you can train like that." "I don't understand," I smiled back apologetically. "The requirements an animal and owner must fulfill before they can participate in the protective phase are so stringent, only the smallest minority make the grade, or should make the grade, if they're being judged properly, which, I admit, isn't always the case," he informed me as he and a magnificent German shepherd dog gave me a tour of the building. "Then how can you make a living doing that kind of training?" I made this inquiry as I mentally noted the wide assortment of top-notch equipment. "I don't." Nick Cooper gave a hearty, more biker, less Harvard laugh. "Those dogs are the cream of the crop, and I work with them for the sheer joy of it." With a smile, he gestured toward the door at the end of the hallway. "Let's go outside. I want to show you something." Cooper stopped in his office long enough to pick up a small duffel bag filled with various noisemakers, then led me to the front of the building where traffic streamed by on the heavily traveled highway. While the off-lead dog sat patiently at his side, he handed me the bag and instructed me to use its contents, including a small handgun loaded with blanks, to do everything in my power to distract the animal. As the cars and trucks roared past us, the dog walked, sat, and performed other obedience rituals, while I failed to unnerve him using every noisemaker in the collection, plus numerous combinations. Several times during this exercise, I added my own yelps to the chaos when the sound of the gun scared me out of my wits when I fired it, or when bicycles, joggers, and other dogs descended on us without warning. By the time the trainer caught an end to the demonstration, I felt frazzled as well as enlightened. "Beglethunde?" I grinned wearily at Cooper and gratefully accepted an encouraging lick from the dog. "You got it," he grinned back, obviously pleased by my response. "No dog can begin to compete for a true Schutzhund title unless they pass that test, which includes those bikers, joggers, and strange dogs, by the way." "You've convinced me," I laughed and held up my hands in surrender. "I can see why so few make it to the third level. Unlike the critics, I don't worry about the few who legitimately make it through Schutzhund 3. My human companion smiled ruefully. "I worry about all the dogs who lack the brains, temperament, and committed owners to legitimately make it into the program at all." "You must be very proud of those who do." I gracefully turned the conversation toward the subject of his current Schutzhund candidates. "You bet," Nick Cooper glowed with pride. "Like I said, for everyone who makes it, quite a few fall by the wayside for one reason or another." "Was Jeff Weintraub one of those who fell by the wayside?" I asked to validate my visit. "Ah, the flaming douchebag." Cooper rubbed his chin thoughtfully. "He's the kind of person who gives the sport a bad name." "How come?" I peered at him curiously. "Because I'm willing to bet he tells people Sabrina has Schutzhund training, when the truth is neither of them had the temperament to make it through the preliminaries." Nick Cooper didn't exactly look angry when he said this, but his expression left no doubt that he had no use for Jeff Weintraub. "If it's any consolation," I assured him, "he never mentioned it to me." "Good." The trainer appeared genuinely relieved. "I'd hoped that scared him enough to keep his mouth shut." Evidently, my mental image of him putting a noose around Weintraub's neck, tying the other end of the rope to the back of a motorcycle, and dragging him through the streets, resulted in an expression on my face that my host felt demanded he explain further, because he did. After doing a half-assed job training his dog for months, he sneaked in here with some young woman half his age and got her to put on a padded training suit one evening while I was tied up with a class at the other end of the building. Unfortunately, the sport has a way of attracting idiots who just can't wait to sick their dog on someone. His black scowl clearly communicated what Cooper thought about such people. It was just by luck that I caught him inciting Sabrina to attack her. To put it mildly, I went berserk, literally threw the little scumbag out of the building and told him never to come back. And all the while, that dumb kid kept begging him not to be mad at her and telling him she'd do anything for him. Anything. I have a daughter her age, and by God, I wanted to kill that bastard. As I processed the trainer's angry comments about Jeff Weintraub and Sabrina, the old saw, "A little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing," flew into my mind and collided with the memory of the glossy photos of Monica Sonko's mangled body. "Tell me about the ones who do make the grade," I requested in an effort to dissipate his foul mood and the disturbing image his tail evoked. "Aside from Thor here," Cooper gestured toward the animal resting quietly at his feet, "there's only one right now I think could go the distance, provided his owner doesn't crap out on me." "Why would the owner?" I asked, daring to hope he spoke of the owner of the elusive Rottweiler. "He's young and in love," the ex-biker-turned-conservative businessman shrugged. "From what I gather, the girlfriend isn't too keen about the protective training." "Did he quit?" "Not yet, but yesterday he left word he was going to miss another lesson." Disappointment colored the trainer's words. "That's two in a row." "But he's taught the dog the attack phase," I reiterated, still not sure whether I collected incidental or incriminating information. Cooper nodded. "Just the basics, but the dog catches on very fast. Extraordinary animal." He made no attempt to conceal his admiration for the canine half of the team. "Could teach the owner a few things." "The owner's not too bright," I suggested in an attempt to glean more information. "Oh, he's bright all right," the trainer quickly assured me. "Does some very sophisticated lab work for a genetics engineering firm. Problem is, he's a worrier. Can't relax and enjoy himself and the dog. And that girlfriend of his isn't helping." This time, an image of Douglas DeWitt sitting on the dock, nervously digging at the mud with his bare foot, filled my mind, followed by the never faraway image of Monica's mangled body. "Would you mind giving me his name?" I asked tentatively. "I'd like to interview him." "Can't see it'd do any wrong, and maybe talking to someone like you might do him some good." The idea seemed to please Cooper. "Name's Douglas DeWitt, and he lives with his folks about 5 miles from here. I'll give them a call to see if he's home." Before I could think of any way to stop him, Nick Cooper disappeared into his office and picked up the phone. While Cooper made his call, I stood in the hall outside his office, frantically trying to summon some valid explanation I could give Douglas DeWitt for showing up on his doorstep. I'd narrowed the possibilities to menopause and senile dementia when the trainer returned wearing a penitent grin. "Guess I misled you," he apologized. "According to Doug's mother, he's still out of town. I just assumed he was home when he called, but she said she'd be happy to talk to you." I stared at him in confusion. "His mother's very knowledgeable about both her son and his dog. Plus, she broke her leg about a month ago, and she's pretty much stuck in the house. I think she'd enjoy the company." When he put it that way, how could I possibly refuse? Besides, maybe Douglas DeWitt's mother could tell me more about the girlfriend who didn't want her son to teach his dog to attack. Thanks to Nick Cooper's excellent directions, I easily found the DeWitt's home in a very respectable, older neighborhood. By the time I parked on the wide, tree-lined street and walked up to the house, a petite woman on crutches held the front door open for me. After we exchanged greetings, she led me into a cozy living room with a lovely view of the lush lawn and well-tended flower beds at the back of the house. "How may I help you? Nick tells me you're interested in the way people and animals interact." Ms. DeWitt spoke in a strong, melodious voice that belied her injured status. I nodded in agreement, thinking that a nebulous enough description of my work to encompass all kinds of questions. "How does it feel having a potential Schutzhund in the family?" "Oh, they're not there yet," Ms. DeWitt corrected me with a cheery laugh, "but we're very proud of what they've done so far." She handed me a framed photo of her son sitting beside a massive black Rottweiler with rich mahogany markings. "May I see the dog?" I donned my most innocent expression as I returned the picture. Nick spoke so highly of him. "He's not here." Ms. DeWitt lightly ran her hand over the smooth surface of the crutches leaning against a chair beside her when she offered that puzzling reply. When I traded in my most innocent for my most baffled expression, she elaborated. "He tore his ear while vacationing with Doug in New Hampshire, and Doug automatically brought him along when he made a quick trip home. On the way, though, the dog started shaking his head or pulled out his stitches. I don't remember exactly what Doug said happened." She smiled at me and shrugged her delicate shoulders apologetically. "There was blood everywhere. I took one look at that mess and told Doug to take that animal straight to the vet's. And that's where he's been ever since. It's usually just an overnight stay for a cut ear, if that," I automatically blurted out as my medical training kicked in. "I know, but Ted, my husband, has been awfully busy at work. And with Doug having to go back to New Hampshire that same day and me hobbling around with my leg in a cast, it seemed best. If you'd seen the inside of Doug's car when he got here, I'm sure you would have agreed." She beamed a particularly bright housewife smile. "Do you think your son will finish the Schutzhund training?" I returned to my original subject to avoid raising suspicion about the reason for my visit. "I hope so," Ms. DeWitt's bright smile dimmed. "When he first started, he did so well. Ted and I could see his confidence growing every day. Nick said something about a girlfriend who wasn't too keen on the protective phase." I hoped my voice sounded casual enough that he gave no evidence of my intense interest in my companion's reply to Cooper's observation. "That would have been Monica Sonko," Ms. DeWitt answered after a moment's hesitation. "I don't think you could have called her Doug's girlfriend, though. They worked together, and I think he would have liked her to be, but I never thought her interest in him was anything beyond that of a friend. Yet Nick thought your son was considering giving up the training because she objected to it," I reminded her. "No, I don't think Doug was, at least not at first." Ms. DeWitt semi-refuted that premise after more thought. "He tried to get Monica to enroll her dog, Harry or Harvey, I think his name was, in Nick's beginner's obedience class with the idea that he might be eligible for Schutzhund someday himself. Dad felt he was an undisciplined but very intelligent animal." "Did she enroll the dog?" The older woman shook her head sadly. "She was going to, but then someone she worked with, her supervisor, I think, convinced her that the training would make the dog worse rather than better. Of course, that was all rubbish." Ms. DeWitt readily dismissed the idea with a wave of her hand. "Ted thought he told Monica that because he had something going with her, and it turned out Ted was right. But Doug wouldn't hear of it." "It seems a shame not to finish the training." I gave my hostess an encouraging smile when I reiterated that same point. "I got the impression that Nick thinks both your son and his dog have a lot going for them." "Everyone seems to think that except Doug." Ms. DeWitt sighed a mother's sigh. "Since the accident, he doesn't even want to talk about it." "The accident?" "A tragic accident, I'm afraid." Her eyes vacantly swept the room. "Monica's dog killed her." For the briefest instant, I considered telling Douglas DeWitt's mother everything I knew about Monica Sonko's death. However, once again, my delay drove her to say more. "That's why Doug came home that day. He was so upset when he heard about it, he didn't even call. Just jumped in the car with a dog and started driving." A shiver swept through her body, and she pulled the paisley shawl from the back of her chair and wrapped it around herself, a self-protective gesture that made me feel guilty about lying to her. Until she began talking again. The timing couldn't have been worse because there's a lot of unrest at the company, plus Ted had just lost a valuable animal the day before. She fingered the fringe of her shawl absently while I mulled over that tantalizing statement. "Your son and his father work at the same place?" I ventured casually. "I'm sorry." Ms. DeWitt's sweet, apologetic smile made me feel even more deceitful. "Everyone around here knows that, and I assumed you did too. Ted's chief geneticist at TransGen, and Doug works in one of the labs there. Would you like to talk to Ted? He should be home any minute now." Luckily, I was glancing at my watch when Ms. DeWitt made that offer, and the surprised gasp escaped from my lips. That way, I could act horrified about the time and tell her a pathetic lie about getting home to my pets, one of whom required life-sustaining medication. As she cheerfully balanced on her crutches and waved goodbye, I raced down the walk, jumped into my car, and drove away as fast as the speed limit would allow. You've been listening to an excerpt from Beastly Business, an animal behavior and human-animal bond mystery, written by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, books on animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavioral and bond sites, check out my website at mm@mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the book Beastly Business in any form are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music in The Steppes of Central Asia by Alexander Bordin is used with permission of Katova Arts, www.katova.com.